good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. You're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. One third of Pakistan is underwater from the devastating floods there. The cumulative number of deaths since mid-June is over 1,200, and almost a third of those deaths are children. But if the human toll is catastrophic, the financial toll is almost unimaginable, not only just for the immediate humanitarian aid and relief, but also the long-term cost of rebuilding the country. Pakistan is responsible for less than 1% of global carbon emissions, but has borne the brunt of this climate catastrophe. So what is the world's responsibility towards Pakistan at this time? Harjit Singh joins us now from Delhi, India. He is a senior advisor for Climate Action Network International. Harjit, can you help us understand the confluence of factors that have caused these devastating floods in Pakistan and why it must serve as a global wake-up call to the urgency of the climate crisis?
Thank you, Melissa, for having me. So yes, we all know that climate change is here and now, and all these impacts that we are seeing are primarily because of climate change. So number of factors that came together for Pakistan this time, one, melting of glaciers has been happening at an unprecedented rate over the last 30 years. And I must underline that Pakistan has most glaciers outside Arctic and Antarctic region. So it has 7,200 glaciers, to be precise. And oceans have been warmed and continue to warm, which means they, you know, put more intense precipitation, causing more rains. And that's what we have seen, how certain areas got 500 to 600% more rains this time. And then, of course, it being a developing country, its infrastructure is not that strong. And there are also cases of unplanned and unregulated development. So a number of factors came together, and that's why you see massive devastation brought by these unprecedented floods.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Pakistan is responsible for less than 1% of global carbon emissions, but climate change, the impact of climate change, does not care about national borders. How should we at this time be thinking about global responsibility towards Pakistan and having suffered this climate catastrophe?
So climate change is a global problem, and we need to recognize that the crisis has been caused by a handful of countries, rich countries, industrialized nations who have been industrializing over the last 150 years, and a bunch of corporations. You know, to give you data, only 100 companies are responsible for more than 70% of emissions. So imagine a small number of countries and companies have caused the problem in the first place, and majority of developing countries and people around the world are suffering from the impact. So as you said, Pakistan is responsible for less than 1% of global greenhouse gas emissions that exist today. And this is the reality of majority of developing countries who are facing the brunt and losing their farms and homes and income and infrastructure.
The global south definitely disproportionately affected by the climate crisis. Harjit, do we have a comprehensive understanding of the mechanisms to directly address loss and damage once a climate catastrophe has happened?
Well, we knew it 30 years ago. It's when small island states have been advocating for a mechanism to deal with it. But the discussion, particularly on the phrase loss and damage, started in 2007. We got a mechanism in 2013, but the reality is not a single penny has been provided by UN climate change systems, because rich countries continue to block that discussion. And that's why there is no system in place to raise money to help people who are already suffering from climate impacts. So the current Green Climate Fund provides money for mitigation, which means reducing emissions and protecting forests, and also for adaptation, which means preparing for climate impacts well in advance. But the reality is, one, that money has not been enough, and there is no stream of funding to help people recover from the impacts, what we call as loss and damage.
Why is loss and damage in particular such a contentious issue when it comes to climate talks?
Well, rich countries directly relate loss and damage with liability and compensation. their fear is that once the money starts flowing in the name of loss and damage finance, it opens up floodgates for litigation for them in their own countries, and also internationally. But the reality is that when people are suffering, in the UN system, there is a way of doing it through international cooperation and solidarity. Principally, it is a matter of compensation and reparation, but the world is looking for cooperation and solidarity, and that's where rich countries have to shed their fears and come to the table.
But if I understand correctly, rich countries like the US, like other developed nations, they are already contributing hundreds of thousands, if not millions, millions when it comes to humanitarian relief aid for Pakistan in this flood. I mean, why then such hesitation to discuss this? Do you think that this might change the narrative going into COP27? I think it's in November. Are you optimistic that once we get to COP27, that Pakistan's climate catastrophe will change the global conversation about loss and damage?
Melissa, you are right. The system of humanitarian aid exists, but at the same time, it is inadequate. It's based on the whims and fancies of donors and their trade relationships, geopolitics, and so on. And of course, there are individuals who donate through that system because of compassion and solidarity. But it's not enough. Look at the kind of appeals we have seen for Pakistan relief work. It's only in millions, but the damage is now being estimated to the tune of $10 billion. So one, humanitarian system is not enough. And second, it's not based on obligation. When we talk about climate impacts, it's not a natural phenomenon. It has been caused by rich countries and rich corporations who have to be held to account. And that's why we need something which goes beyond humanitarian aid system that is based on responsibilities and obligation under the UN Climate Change Secretariat, so that we can support people who are facing climate emergency now. And coming to the climate conference in Egypt this November, it should become the most important issue. Pakistan also happens to be the chair of G77 and China, which means the biggest bloc of developing countries. And Pakistan suffering these impacts means this should be the top priority for all the negotiators from developing countries to demand justice for people who are facing climate disasters. So it should become the most important issue, but I must also share that it's not even on the final agenda yet. So we are fighting many battles to get the issue of loss and damage on the agenda and then get an ambitious outcome so that people can be supported.
Are you optimistic, Harjit? I'm wondering whether you're feeling a change in the winds. Is the conversation changing? Is the mood of the world changing because of what these, you know, devastating pictures that we're seeing coming out of Pakistan?
I'm optimistic because we now see developing countries a lot more united behind the demand for loss and damage finance. I am optimistic because I see the solidarity from our friends in the global north, ordinary citizens who are also facing climate impacts. You know, what is holding us back is these rich countries, governments, the US, the European Union, Switzerland, who have not been allowing this issue to make progress. So people are with us, developing country governments are with us. It's these handful of rich countries, governments, who are blocking the progress. So we are going to put pressure. So as civil society, as Climate Action Network, we are very positive. We are going to go a lot more prepared and we'll pressurize these blockers to change their position and come to the table.
That's Harjit Singh from Climate Action Network International from Delhi, India. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. More than 1,200 people have been killed in the devastating floods in Pakistan, almost a third of whom are children. 33 million have been impacted by rushing floodwaters and continuous rain. That's 15% of the country's population. Now, with public health at risk, relief workers are on the ground racing against the clock to provide primary health care, food and clean water. Dr. Khalid Ahmadana joins us now. He is the Deputy Operations Cell Manager at the Emergency Desk for Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders. Dr. Khalid, what are MSF's main concerns right now with the situation in Pakistan?
As you mentioned now, like 33 million people who have been affected and more than 1,500 have been lost their life and 1,000 have been injured in this crisis. Most of the livelihood and stock have been destroyed. The country, third of the country now is under the water. And this is my public health impact in the populations, and now is MSF trying to launch immediate response for the population who have been affected, and now we have a team in the ground. The main issue, the area are affected is different from each area, so that means you need to evaluate and to assess according to the immediate need in the ground.
We understand that much of the country is still inundated by floodwaters, so relief workers, the MSF team on the ground, would have difficulty accessing roads or those who need help. Can I ask you, with 500,000 homes having been lost in the floods, where are those who are displaced staying now? What are their living conditions?
So the as I said, is that it's different from area to another area. Some of the population, they move to secure area, and some of the population, they try to stay in the places where they have destroyed houses. Access, it is one of the issues because some of the road have been blocked, some of the bridge have been destroyed. The team in the ground witnessing a lot of population, they try to be closer to the road. Those can be accessible. However, the team trying to access some of the of people who are in isolated area in collaboration with the government and in collaboration with another stakeholder trying to do a relief as
What are the public health concerns right now? What are you most worried about in terms of diseases?
So the as you can see, as I said, that like third of the country now it is under the water. The main concern is for the waterborne diseases. Mostly likely acute water diarrhea, cholera can be happen, and water resources now is under the water, so drinkable water and not. The people, they don't have a good quality of water. So this is, it's one of the concern. It's my increased diseases, gastritis, cholera, and also later on also there is some concern regarding malaria and dengue fever, because the area is known of epidemic of malaria and dengue fever. Knowing that also the people, they lost their food, their harvest, their stock also, there's a highly possibility also we might have some children affected, will be affected by malnutrition and in the coming weeks.
Right. Can I ask you about that? So you mentioned that some areas have difficulty accessing humanitarian aid, so food and drinking water are in short supply. What is being done? Do we know the extent of that problem, the extent of the impact of those who cannot reach aid?
So as a consequence of that, MSFs are trying to launch mobile clinics in some of the affected area, try to reach those who have been, cannot be coming to the health facilities, knowing that some of the health facilities have been also destroyed, so are not functioning. So in to provide healthcare, also to provide immediately non-food items like hygiene kits and shelters and water and drinkable water.
Right. We understand that the water from this flood might take up to 2 or 3 months to evaporate. Dr. Khalid, how can and how should the international community step up now to stem what might become a protracted humanitarian crisis?
So the immediately response, they should be focusing in providing water, food and shelters, and also addressing the high risk diseases. So a coordination between multi-stakeholder and a coordination allocating the resources also to immediately response and the supply in order to scale up the operations for this big crisis.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Dr. Khalid Ahmadana from Doctors Without Borders. After this, we're going to be speaking to the United Nations Population Fund about how women and children and girls in particular are bearing the brunt of the Pakistan floods. Stay tuned to consider this. Hello, I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome back to Consider This. Let's continue our discussion about the impact of the devastating floods in Pakistan, especially for the millions of women and children who have been disproportionately affected by the climate catastrophe. Let's speak now to Dr. Bakhtiar Kadyrov. He is the UN Population Fund country's representative for Pakistan. He joins us now from Islamabad. Dr. Kadyrov, can you begin our conversation today by helping us understand the scale of the impact of these floods on women and children, but also concerning the hundreds of thousands of pregnant women and their access to maternal care?
We know that in disaster of such a scale, unprecedented scale, women and girls bear the heaviest brunt. We know that pregnancy and childbirth don't stop for natural disasters. Of the 6.4 million people in dire need of humanitarian assistance, more than just 1.6 million are women of reproductive age. It is estimated that 128,000 women are pregnant at the moment, which means they need essential reproductive health services, especially life-saving emergency obstetric and neonatal care. So what are the big problems at the moment? Because the damages to health facilities and infrastructure, are putting the lives of women of reproductive age, especially pregnant women, at great risk. So in terms of access to life-saving services, we know that more than 304,000 kilometers of roads, 162 bridges, and more than 1.1 million houses have been damaged so far. So therefore, this all impedes women's access to life-saving reproductive health services. For instance, damage to health facility infrastructure, including building, water supplies, electric installations, equipment, medicines, and medical supplies are all disrupting service delivery. This is, as I mentioned, also damage to roads and bridges, impede access to health centers and hospitals, both by pregnant women and for maintaining the supply chain to replenish essential and life-saving medicines by the by the humanitarian workers, by the service providers.
Right. You mentioned pregnant women, hundreds of thousands of pregnant women expected to deliver in the next few months. Babies born during this disaster will also need urgent medical attention. What are your immediate concerns about the babies who are born in the next few months?
So as I mentioned, it is estimated that 128,000 women are pregnant at the moment, with 42,000 expected childbirths in this month. And then the lives of mothers and newborns will be at risk without the availability of or access to life-saving emergency obstetric and neonatal care, without essential medicine, access to skilled birth attendants and emergency obstetric and neonatal care. So as I mentioned, the situation on the ground is compounded by the by severe impacts, flood impacts to infrastructure, and I mentioned damage to roads and bridges, which hinder the delivery of humanitarian aid assistance as well, and access to essential and life-saving maternal and neonatal care services, maternal health and neonatal care services.
Right. You mentioned a little earlier that, you know, disasters like this disproportionately affect women and children, girls as well. How can humanitarian action programs put women and girls at the center of their response?
Especially now, we are working to integrate maternal health, women's and girls' concerns in the ongoing rapid needs assessments. The rapid needs assessment in SIND will start tomorrow, and our team is on the ground and working with the national counterparts, with the Departments of Health, Women Development Department, Social Welfare Department, and other counterparts to integrate women's and girls' concerns in the rapid needs assessments, so that we reflect, so that our response plans are informed by evidence on the ground, and to address the immediate needs and concerns of women and girls, especially pregnant women in this case. So given the number of pregnant women and also the safety concerns of girls as well, given that 500,000 people are displaced by floods, reside in relief camps and host communities, and also it's, this places them at an increased risk of gender-based violence and child marriage. Girls, for women, limited access to life-saving reproductive health, emergency obstetric and neonatal care also puts their lives at risk. Mothers and newborns' lives. Therefore, our priority at the moment is main priority is to set up women-friendly health spaces, women-friendly safe spaces, also safe spaces for girls as well. Mobile medical camps, establishing mobile medical camps, given the damage to infrastructure, roads and bridges, tent hospitals, mobile outreach clinics for reproductive health services. This is in addition to support the midwifery, deployment of midwives, in addition to providing life-saving medicines and supplies.
Right. Dr. Kadyrov, are you concerned that this humanitarian crisis might become protracted, might last a long time, given that flood waters are expected to remain at high levels for many months to come?
The acute phase, I think the immediate emergency response will last for 6 months. We estimate that the rehabilitation, reconstruction work period will last longer, up to 5 years. Rehabilitation, reconstruction work will last longer, up to 5 years. One of the major concerns that even prior to the floods, the maternal mortality ratio was high, constituted 186. Per 100,000 live births, which is equivalent to 12,000 maternal deaths annually due to prolonged labor and hemorrhage, and with wide geographic disparities. And then in Balochistan, the maternal mortality was the highest, 298, and it will be exacerbated by the floods and limited access to life-saving reproductive health services.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Bakhtiar Kadyrov from UNFPA, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. That's all I have for you on this episode. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.